This agenda paper 6 discusses an issue relating to the transition provision of IFRS 10 and IFRS 11. The submitter raised the issue because the submitter observes that IFRS 10 and IFRS 11 do not provide specific exemptions from retrospective application in respect of the application of IFRS 21, IFRS 23, and IFRS 36. The committee discussed this issue at the July meeting and tentatively decided not to add the issue to its agenda. We received 3 comment letters. 2 agreed with the committee's decision and 1 disagreed. We analyzed the 3 points raised by the respondent who disagreed with the decision, and we think that his argument can be addressed by changing the wording for the tentative agenda decision instead of re-deliberating this issue. Consequently, we recommend that the committee should finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda.
While I'm not really fond of that agenda rejection, there is a sentence I'm really concerned about. It's the proposed addition in the second paragraph, the one that starts with the interpretations committee also noted that within the context of assessing control, the relevant activities of investees under IFRS 10 would be largely the same as significant financial and operating policies under IFRS 27. Currently, we are struggling extremely hard to explain that IFRS 27 and IFRS 10 are not the same, and that in particular relevant activities, it's not the same as significant financial and operating policies, because it's much broader. And I think that if you include that sentence, you reduce all the efforts we are trying to do on the field to nothing. So I'm extremely concerned about that sentence, to say that the two are broadly the same, and so you should not worry. I think we should worry. Issuers should worry.
Yeah, we discussed this yesterday, and I think we agree it's not a helpful addition because there is a difference. That was part, and we've seen from a lot of feedback we've had at our seminars and things that there are differences between them. That was the intention when we wrote it, so I think we agreed we should take that sentence out of it, right?
Any objection?
I have an objection, right?
Exactly the same concern.
Okay. Other comments, reactions? Scott?
I agree with the agenda decision, particularly with taking out that sentence that we just discussed. I was a bit concerned by the one comment letter that suggested that we were loosening the meaning of impracticability. And also the staff's observation that we think that respondent refers to the current practice with respect to impracticability, implying that current practice is wrong, that current practice is applying too harsh a notion of impracticability, and so what we would be doing would be setting them right. I am a bit worried that we're doing something bigger than we think we're doing. I mean, I thought that this agenda decision reflected the appropriate way to think about impracticability, because in order to apply something retroactively, you need to be able to do all the follow-on things as well, and if you can't, then it's impractical. That makes sense to me, but if practice isn't interpreting it that way, and we're telling them that they ought to be, and that's a change. It's a change not just for this, but for any other situation where it comes up. And I'm a little worried we don't understand the full extent of, you know, what we're saying will lead. Is there any more insight on that comment, particularly the comment that's in paragraph 12 of the paper that implies that the staff knows that current practice on impracticability is different than what we're saying?
I'll let why he referred to the specifics of the paper. This has been a concern of mine for some time, because I was at the board table when the board did the revisions to IS-8, and my very clear sense of the then board members was that impracticable meant impossible, that it was a very high hurdle, and, you know, not capable of doing with human resources kind of thing. I don't know what the practice interpretation is, but I know that that's what I heard sitting at the board table when we were there. Juan, you want to talk about the specifics of what you said in the paper?
I'm not well aware of what the practice is interpreting impracticability, but what we are just saying in this is in the paper is that we are not interpreting the meaning of impracticability. We are just referring to the wording impracticable as defined in IFRS 10 transition provision. So that's why we can go on with the agenda decision.
And I think I'd just add, and certainly, you know, I'm familiar with the description that Wayne's just given of how it's applied in practice. But obviously, we also look at to see what the specific transition provisions are that are IFRS 10, and the notion there of how you would apply those different procedures in the context of judging that something is impracticable, and perhaps there is a disconnect there or a difference between what's in IFRS 10 versus what we've heard described as the sort of the impossible approach with regards to IS-8.
I'm very pleased that Scott brought that comment onto the table. Because I know that in practice, the impracticability exemption has been applied and interpreted very narrowly. So, indeed, this would be opening a door.
And I was trying to figure out exactly what door might be open. So if we interpret impracticable as impossible, so if we're retrospectively applying IFRS 10, and that involved putting assets on the books 4 years ago that we didn't originally put on the books, then we would have to figure out whether those assets would have been impaired in the impending 4 years, and if we have no data because we didn't collect it, then would it not be impossible to do that, and therefore it is impossible to apply IFRS 10 retrospectively. I mean, I can read impracticable as impossible, and our agenda decision still makes sense to me, right? So it still, you know, you can still have a very narrow view of impracticable, and all this agenda decision is confirming is that it doesn't need to be impossible to come up with the purchase accounting numbers in order to be exempt from applying IFRS 10. Rather, it can be impossible to come up with any of the knock-on adjustments that you'd have to do, and that would be enough to give you the exemption. So I thought you could still keep a narrow view and our agenda decision still work, but I was concerned that apparently some people are reading that we're saying you used to think impractical meant darn near impossible, but it doesn't mean that anymore. I don't see the words where we're broadening that.
I didn't either, but I had the same view that if somebody thinks we ought to worry about it. John?
Yeah, I'm just going to make a similar comment. I don't read the interpretation as actually changing the definition or the concept of impracticability. I think the only thing I would say is that if maybe the decision doesn't draw enough attention to how high the hurdle is and gives an impression that it's sort of an easy that it's in some way an easy exemption to achieve. That's it.
Charlotte?
I think it does change the definition if you regard the requirements of the other standards would never be impossible, if they would best be difficult. It's almost I don't know if that's what people are saying, that they would be at best quite low and maybe difficult, but it could never be impossible. Therefore, you're allowing in, you sort of open the door.
Is there a sense that we need to do something specific with the decision? I'm not seeing any positives. Okay. All right, then. We'll go as it is. Is that all you needed, one hand? Philippe?
It might be a bit theoretical question, but it gives me an impression in reading the last paragraph of the proposed rejection that if I turn it around and assume the committee had determined that in the light of existing transition requirements there is not sufficient guidance or not sufficient exemption, could the committee add to its agenda the creation of a new exemption, or isn't it a self-setting exercise? Rather than something the committee could do. I mean, you see my point? It seems to give it. Yes, exactly. So it will not be an agenda decision of the committee to create a new exemption or to create new guidance.
Yeah, but then we say it that neither an interpretation nor an amendment was necessary. If we concluded they were necessary, then we'd refer it to the board.
Yeah, but you would not add it to the agenda of the committee.
No way.
Okay, well, maybe the staff can think about it, but I just get an impression that committee could have concluded that additional guidance is needed or additional exemption and could have dealt with it by adding the issue to its agenda. I think an exemption can only be dealt with by the board, not by the committee.
Yeah, I take your point. I guess what we would, if we had decided it was necessary, we would
have joined the conference.
We would add it to our agenda and then propose something to the board. So we'll take